Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it, one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
And my name is Quinn, pronouns zezier, or they, them.
This week, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 11, the one with Mrs. Bing.
Ooh.
This episode aired on January 5th, 1995, was written by Alexa Jung, and directed by James Burrows.
In this episode, Monica and Phoebe's catcalling puts a mediocre guy into a coma. Rachel tries her hand at writing erotic fiction, and Ross kisses Chandler's mom.
Bum bum bum.
Conversation we had started and opened up with everyone, I guess a few episodes ago, and we haven't really spoken to it since. And so we had talked about then a few different things, including wanting to tie into our podcast more of a land acknowledgement. And I guess we want to say that this is something that we are still developing in the background, and we don't want to talk about it every single podcast. For two reasons, and one is that we don't want to turn it into us.
We don't want to make it about us.
Yeah, centering us in this land acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
Though at the same time, we do recognize that we are white people who are trying to figure this out. But then also why we don't want to talk about every episode is because we really don't want to alienate any Indigenous folks who are our listeners. And what we're planning on doing is slowly starting to integrate things along the way. And every time we do, we want to share with you why we're doing it, because the reason why we're doing this podcast does have an educational aspect to it, both for us to learn and for the audience to learn and deconstruct with us. I think today we'll just say that we have now started on our Instagram posts every soundbite that we put up to integrate the location being that it is recorded on Jajage, which is what most people call, or like the land that most people nowadays call Montreal. Are we doing this right?
Probably not.
Cool.
So let's keep going. So what are three things that you want to talk about?
Oh my goodness, I didn't even write down three things.
Oh my God, you're pulling about a me. I'm the one that usually doesn't write things down.
I want to talk about men catcalling versus women catcalling.
Interesting, that's on my list too.
Oh, look at us. It's almost like we're related. And I wanted to talk about sex positivity.
That's also on my list. Wow, way to steal my stuff.
But I also wanted to talk about the concept of villainizing women's sexuality or open sexuality. What do you want to talk about, Em?
I want to talk about those two things, and I also want to talk about the creepiness level. Like, I feel like there's, like, the overarching theme of this episode is creepiness in various forms.
I mean, I know, right? And I also want to talk about consent in that kiss.
Yeah, and we also have to talk about consent with, like, Phoebe changing that dude's clothes.
No, or Monica
changing that dude's clothes.
Oh, like, my God.
There's just, like, there's consent so much and sex positivity stuff. And, like, there's, like, sex and consent and creepiness all packaged into one delicious episode. This is exciting. I'm stoked. Let's get into it.
Yeah. First of all, I actually really enjoyed this episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so... Mm-hmm. It has, like, the right amount of, like, cringy versus, like, funny at the same time. Just to let you know, guys, again, our neighbors are doing construction on their driveway, so if you can hear anything in the background, we apologize. We do make an effort to,
Edit it out.
Yeah. We've now hung a weighted blanket up around the window.
In hopes of it absorbing the sound.
So also, please let us know if the last couple weeks the sound of the construction has, like, rung through too much. We will make an effort to figure out,
how to block
if there's a better way Because especially if it's going to deter people from listening to the podcast, it's something that, well, makes no point then to record it. So we'll figure something out. If it's too much, let us know.
Yes. Okay, so cold open. The scene starts. They're walking through the street. And in the first 4 seconds of this episode, when Monica and Rachel cross the street to get to the newsstand, you can actually see Joey's VD poster in the background.
That's right, folks. Go back, turn it on, and you have, like, literally within the first second.
4 seconds. Yeah, not even 2 seconds.
Yeah. It's, like, right there.
Yeah.
Which I think is really... I love when shows do that. They do, like, a little reference back to another episode very subtly in the background.
Yeah, that's cute.
And so they're crossing the road, and
Phoebe wants to check her horoscope.
Yesterday's horoscope, which I think is just the best.
So Monica thinks this guy is gonna rip her heart out and devastatingly beautiful or something along those lines.
I'm sure that he was very dashing for the 90s, but that hair is just not...
Yeah, Quinn has a problem with swoopy hair.
I have a problem with, like, Ken hair. I like swoopy hair. Okay. I don't like Ken doll hair.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe it is the hair. I don't know. I don't like it. Maybe she's just too, a little bit too polished for me.
Yeah. And then we get some good old-fashioned catcalling.
Good old-fashioned catcalling, if that's what we want to call it.
It's such a different... Okay, it's so different. Are we going to get into this right away? Because, like, honestly, it happens right away.
Yes.
It's such a different dynamic to be a woman walking down the street and getting catcalled by a dude versus a dude being catcalled by a woman. Now, I'm not saying that either one is valid.
Yeah.
But it's a different power dynamic.
Well, yeah, and it's also that men catcalling women, there is a history of women being harassed mm-hmm. in the street.
Mm-hmm.
And
By men.
And so harassment of women by men is very intertwined into catcalling.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason why catcalling as a blanket statement is bad has to do with the fact that anytime you catcall a woman, you are playing further into affirming that it is okay to harass women. And also, when you have that much baggage of being harassed mm-hmm. as a woman or a femme person on the road, anywhere, really.
On the road.
That it's really hard for any sort of catcalling to be perceived as anything else than harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that intention doesn't always equate effect.
Yeah.
And when you take a certain action, you have to consider the fact that what that actually will mean to the person and not what your intention is.
Yeah.
Catcalling a woman or femme person is not a compliment. It is very integrated into harassment of women and rape culture in our society.
Mm-hmm,
so sure. Don't catcall femme people. Is the point of this.
But that's not the situation here.
Yeah.
And so... And
it's not to say that it's completely okay what they did, and it's clear that it isn't because then an ambulance hits him.
Yeah.
Also, did you notice how her woo-woo turned into a wee-woo, wee-woo?
Yeah, that was cute.
Yeah.
It was definitely a different vibe than what you normally see of a vibe of, like, if we were to, like... switch it to when Joey was, like, looking that woman up and down on the street. You don't fear for your life in the same way. You don't fear for your safety in the same way. That's not to say that, like, women can't rape men. That's not at all what I'm trying to say. But what I'm trying to say is that, like, it's just a different dynamic.
Yeah.
Different dynamic.
There's, I mean, like, how many times have you been catcalled and then this person, like, kind of randomly... kind of follows you for a few blocks and
so many times
and in like down a dark alley and not, you know, that you're trying to, I mean, even if, whatever.
But I told you about that guy that walked, that when I finished my shift at Fats one night, Fats is a bar I used to work at downtown. It was like 3:30 in the morning and I was walking to Point St. Charles and this guy saw me and crossed the street and was walking with me and he walked with me for like 15 minutes. And he kept saying the entire time, he was like, I'm walking with you because you're a woman and you shouldn't be walking alone at night. I'm walking with you because you're a woman and you shouldn't be walking alone at night. And I was just like, hey man, like, thanks, but you're actually the one that's making me uncomfortable. So if your goal here is to make sure that I feel safe, then like I would appreciate if you didn't walk with me. And so like I said that, like I very clearly stated my boundaries, but you refused to leave.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to like, I literally had to run away from him.
Yeah.
I had to run away from him. Like I told him
that. You didn't want him to see where you live.
Yeah. Cause I was getting close to my house and I didn't want him to see where I live. So I said to him, I was like, I basically said, I was like, okay, look, if you're genuinely and honestly concerned with my safety, I'm going to walk over to this gas station over here and I'm going to call a cab and a cab will take me home. Like if you're genuinely concerned for my safety. And so I walked over to the gas station, but then the gas station was closed. So I ducked behind the gas station and just booked it all the way home.
Yeah, that was really scary.
Like, and this was before I ran. Yeah, that was really intense. Like, anyways, that story is like one of like millions of stories of people who have been harassed by men on the street and like wouldn't stop following them or, you know, whatever it is. And I just think it's like, we have so many noises in this house right now.
I don't know if you just heard a baby cry.
Oh my God. Yeah. Nora is crying for my story. Anyways, yeah, whatever. Maybe we can get more into it later, but it's just, it feels like a very different power dynamic. It felt more playful in the way that, like, because they already had interacted, you know what I mean? Like, he had said something to them. He said, nice hat. He interacted with them. He, like, acknowledged them.
And also,
and then they turned around and, like,
flipping around as well, like, comparing it to Joey, like, in the situation with Joey, he's, like, undressing her with his eyes. Like, you can tell he's, like, picturing sex with this person and, like, sexualizing this person.
Carol's got an ass. Like, that woman's got an ass like Carol.
Yeah. You know, like, sexualizing this person without their consent.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, they were not objectifying him. They were trying to engage in some sort of conversation.
I don't know if you can say they weren't objectifying him. Because they, like, they made a decision about his personality based on his looks, and then they decided that this was someone that was, like, gonna break their heart or whatever line they say. But, like...
Maybe objectifying isn't quite the right word, but it definitely didn't feel like they were... It wasn't as invasive. It wasn't invasive to him. And again, power dynamic
isn't really important in there. Yeah, like in that...
Except they wooed him in the middle of the street and he got hit by a car.
An ambulance, which is like one of those moments in which Alanis Morissette would sing, isn't it ironic? Don't you think? It's like getting hit by an ambulance when you're crossing the street. Next scene.
Way to go, Emily.
2020 hasn't turned out like anyone has expected. For us, the current pandemic left us in an existential crisis wondering what the heck we're doing with our lives. And when is a better time to start a podcast than when you're not sure what you're doing with your life?
When we finally made the decision to start our podcast, we spent a lot of time researching and debating which podcast host to use. You need a podcast host in order to have your podcast available in a variety of different directories, which is the reason you're probably listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. They all cost money and they all have their strengths. But the reason we chose Buzzsprout to host us is because they are designed for new podcasters.
They have a variety of different tools to support you on your journey towards starting a new podcast. Knowing that creating this podcast is going to take a lot of our time and a lot of our money, we are particularly grateful that Buzzsprout offers an affiliate link marketplace, providing us with partnerships with quality brands that we can advertise. We don't get any money for the advertisements themselves. However, if you use our affiliate link in the show notes to purchase one of the products, we get a kickback at no additional expense to you.
So today we're repping Buzzsprout because we have the firsthand experience to say that it was the right decision to use them. And if you're thinking of starting a podcast because you're also experiencing a pandemic existential crisis, then you should do it. And you should use Buzzsprout and our affiliate link to do so. Following the link in our show notes lets Buzzsprout know that we sent you. It also gets you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan. And most importantly to us, it helps support our show.
They are in the hospital.
I want to take a moment to sort of like Like, the way that they just start describing him as, like, I bet he's a lawyer and who teaches how to sculpt on the side.
Oh, yeah.
I just... Okay, it's creepy. It's funny because it just shows the desperation of women to find a decent man. Like, really, like, what they're describing, the bar is so low.
So it's like, low.
Oh, you have a pulse and brainwaves.
Yeah.
And you listen to me when I talk and you care about how I feel.
And you are mildly into art.
And... You have an artistic side and you have your life.
A stable job.
Yeah, you have a stable job. Like, what? The bar is the bare minimum
and, for a human.
And it's interesting because this comes after, like, a few episodes where it's like the first episode of Friends, Monica was literally, like, duped into sleeping with some sleazeball, right? Yeah. Like, they all have multiple stories where men trick them into having sex. And then also on the contrast, you have all of their guy friends very casually talking about tricking women into having sex with them or preying on them when they're vulnerable. And so it's just, you know, you have all that happening in the background, and then you have these two women who are in front of a decent-looking man who has brainwaves, and then they're just, like, fantasizing the most, like, basic little things that you would want in a partner.
Yeah.
Like, literally the most basic things. And it's like this giant fantasy.
Oh,
that's
rough.
It's like really dark in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Then we flip over to,
I want to finish. I wrote a note and I just was remembering my note that I wrote. Monica says a line and she was like, why did I make that sound? Like, what did I expect him to do? Say, I love that sound. I must have you now. And I think that that is such a good representation of the way that, like, women and femme people so often feel when they're being catcalled.
Yeah.
Which is, like, this, like what did you expect was going to happen?
That's not,
like,
a conversation opener.
Like, you know, like, being whistled at. Like, honestly, like, I've been whistled at a few times, but most of the time it's, like, shit, like, hey, baby. Like, what do you think is going to happen when you're, like, driving in your car past me and you yell, hey baby, like, I'm gonna run after you and be like, oh my God, you called me baby, I must have you now. Like, I feel like Monica making that line was kind of like pointing out the ridiculousness of catcalling, but I don't think the, like, writers were that deep. I think they were just wrote that line about this one instance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were deep, but whatever.
So next to the next scene, which I have called Mistress Bitch.
So they're sitting on the couch, they're watching Jay Leno, blah, blah, blah. And Monica, if you didn't notice, she's eating popcorn out of the bag, which to me is like my 2020 energy so much. Like, I just want to, like, sit on a couch, watch some TV, and just eat right out of the bag and just, like, chill. I just want to chill so hard in this pandemic, but I cannot because I'm too stressed.
And your ideal life is in a hospital bed unconscious. Okay, so they're all watching Nora Bing. Even Paolo knows who Nora Bing is.
Yeah, she's big. She sold 100 million copies of her book.
Yeah. Okay, I want to take a moment to, like, start unpacking Nora and Chandler's relationship with his mom and his past trauma.
What he's talked about in his, like, of his parents so far, like, he's only ever talked about them both being shitty. And it's only in this episode that you find out that, like, he feels that Nora was shitty too. I think, like, both of his parents' dynamic definitely rubbed off on him in a really unhealthy way. And he feels, like, really betrayed by his parents.
Right.
And he's got to go to therapy, like, hard.
Sort of almost like I see things from two sides when it comes to just focusing in on Nora Bing. Of sort of, like, women being sexually open is often seen, like, portrayed in a really kind of villainizing way. Yeah. Like, oftentimes villains are very sexualized.
Female villains.
Yeah, thank you. Female villains are very sexualized. If a woman is openly sexual or willing to talk about it, there's, like, certain connotations that are really created with it. It's very much portrayed in a certain way. And the respectable women of a show are not usually don't have a very open sexuality.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so interesting because, like, it's not that you can't have these characters. It's, like, it's not that you can't have super sexy, strong characters, but it's, like, it just can't be the only portrayal of women that exist.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. Like, it, and I think that sometimes it's, like, oh, well, like, we can't do anything, right? But it's, like, first of all, hire female writers.
Yeah.
One.
Have more female leads.
Two.
Have more all-women cast movies.
Three. And four. Design women around women's portrayal of women. Like, don't just write women for men. Write women for women. You know? So that's...
And also, like, to bring this criticism a little deeper, have women, first of all, diverse women, yeah, writing characters that are not just portrayals of men's idea of women.
Yeah, like the Manic Pixie Dream Girl women. Yeah. Or the... Like, and that's actually something I wanted to say from the beginning of this episode, which is, like, there's a theme that comes up in Friends so often, which is that, like, there's this theme of, like, men, women just wanting better men, you know? Like, and that's such, that's a theme in, like, all media, not just Friends. It's, like, women just, like, need to find the right guy. And, like, if you just, like, wait long enough, you'll find the right guy. And it becomes this, like, I don't know, like, it just, like, lets dudes be shitty and women just have to find the right ones versus, like, let's make men better and then women, like, wouldn't have to look so hard.
Yeah, I know, right? But also, like, make men better without women becoming little rehabilitation centers for men.
Oh my God.
You know?
Anyways, okay, we're probably going to have to cut half of this for our cut version of this.
Which podcast. We did, guys. Go to our Patreon and subscribe to get the full-length episode.
Yes. Okay. To loop it back around to Nora, because we took a big journey there. Yeah. One of our... So, if you don't already know, going back to our Patreon, we do our Netflix watch parties on Wednesday right before we record the podcast. And if you are a subscriber, as low as $2 a month, you can join the Netflix watch parties. And there's, like, a little chat, and we kind of chat about things going on in the episode. And one of the things, and I wrote it down because I thought it was, like, a really important thing that hadn't crossed my mind when I first watched the episode, was Laura said, she said, apparently you can't be a mom and enjoy sex. Because Jay Leno says to her, he's like, you know, like, don't take this the wrong way, which is, like, always how people start by saying things the wrong way. But, like, he says, don't take this the wrong way, but, like, you don't really seem like a mom to me, you know? And like, I think there's two things here. One is that, like, she then responds by saying, oh, yeah, I'm a great mom. I bought my kid his first condoms, which you can look at in a couple ways. One being, like, did she just, like Quinn said, did, you know, or, like, when we were talking outside of this, like, did she just buy the condoms and, like, said, like, here, you know, and then...
just because you buy your kid condoms does not make you a good mom.
Yeah, exactly. But, like...
Also, clearly Chandler doesn't think you're a good mom.
That so was my two. Yeah, exactly.
You don't get the license to call yourself a good mom unless you have a relationship with your child.
Yeah.
That they can, like, be a part of that and feel that way.
Yeah, totally. So, that was just ridiculous. So, that's one side, is that, like, she's clearly not a great mom. But that's just one aspect of her, right? And I think that when Jay Leno asks the question of, like, you know, I don't really see... Or it's not a question. He's like, I don't really see you as being a mom. Like, he's saying that because she writes erotic fiction and because she talks about her sex life publicly. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, literally all the time on TV, men talk about their sex lives and men talk about sex. And, like, no one's ever like, I can't really see you as being a good dad. Like,
yeah,
that just doesn't happen, you know?
Yeah.
And honestly, like, thank God we're moving in a direction where I genuinely think that good dads are coming. We got a good line of good dads coming through. But, mm-hmm. like, it was, didn't you share a meme?
Oh, right. It's like millennial, millennial dads are so useless. They don't know how to put together, like, any sort of, like,
furniture.
Like, basically, like, they don't know how to use tools. And then someone had retorted to this. It was, like, an article title that was entitled this. And someone had retorted it to it and being like, well, at least I have the emotional capacity to tell my daughter I love her.
Yeah.
And it was just, I feel like that's actually a really interesting kind of reflection on, like, the progression, how we're trying to really move and push towards men having the capacity to be emotionally involved with their children and being required to be involved with their children, take on that sort of responsibility in their life. You look back not even that long ago and that just wasn't the case, you know? Sure. So you can use tools, good for you, but like,
can you use those tools to build a relationship with your family?
Bam! But what I actually wanted to say, because I was saying there's two sides to the Nora story, right? One is that whenever a woman is portrayed in a sexual way, we villainize her. Mm-hmm. However, on the swing side,
flip.
When we swing in the other direction, or when we flip to the other side.
on the swing side.
It made sense, okay?
It's a moo point.
We have this sex positivity topic to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's so much to unpack there because sex positivity is great. Do I think that Nora is a good representation of sex positivity? No, I don't think so. Buying your kid condoms does not make you sex positive.
But buying your kids condoms is a great thing to do if it comes with a good conversation and a healthy conversation about boundaries, consent, and, you know, STIs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, in a non-judgmental environment.
Yeah. And, like, to create a healthy relationship with your kids about and around sex. Mm-hmm. I don't think this gives away any spoilers, but I am going to like zoom out and look at the 10 seasons as a whole. A theme that continuously comes up when Chandler talks about his childhood is kind of being a victim to the sexual whims of his parents. You know, like that it's not a thing that they were just open about in the household in a healthy way, but he was sort of subjected to parts of their sexual lives that he very clearly did not want to be a part of.
Totally.
And it almost is portrayed in a way that the divorce turned into, like, both of his parents being very sexual and almost, like, using their big sex lives against each other in, like, a way of, like, upping each other. Mm-hmm. And Chandler was in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And so all to say is that this is not a healthy portrayal of sex positivity. Mm-hmm. And again, to ring that, like, just because you're open about sex doesn't mean that you're sex positive.
Yeah.
Sex positive does have space for people who do not want to have sex, who are not sexual, who want boundaries around the sharing of sexual things.
Totally.
And so it's, yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
That's all. I don't have a way to wrap it up, but that's what I'm saying.
Well, why don't we keep going a little bit? Maybe we could skip.
Because we're now on scene three.
Yeah, but maybe we could skip this hospital scene The montage a little bit. The creepy montage of Phoebe and Monica. Well, we can talk about it briefly, I guess. So they're being super creepy to this coma dude. Were there just, you know, no nurses around to, like, witness this or make sure that this guy had, like, are people just walking into hospitals, going into people's rooms?
Yeah, this is super weird. It's like, this is why there are restrictions around who can see who at a hospital.
Yeah, like, visitor policies are real. Laura mentioned that. It was very real. But anyways, okay, I want to kind of move forward because we were talking a lot about Nora and I just want to continue to talk about like what happens at the restaurant and stuff. So they definitely show that like Nora and Ross have a relationship. They talk, they're funny, they laugh with each other. And it feels like, I don't know, like Ross and Nora clearly like, have history in terms of, like, Ross and Chandler's friendship, you know? Like, it's not just, like, oh, yeah, my friend's mom. Like they know each other.
Yeah, it's, like, family, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you would say that, because clearly Chandler has a strained relationship with the mom, so, and they only knew each other, in college. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know how close they got, but clearly enough that over the years, like, you know, they know each other.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so first of all, Ross getting drunk off tequila is hilarious.
Ross, do you have anything that needs praising?
So funny.
That's so good.
But yeah, so, okay, so Nora and Ross kiss. And I want to say, like, looping back to the sex positivity conversation, and I think that we talked about this a lot when we had the polyamory conversation, but, like, sex positivity doesn't mean just sleeping with whoever you want or hooking up with whoever you want without regard for consequences or other people's feelings or et cetera, et cetera. And so, like...
Exactly.
Sex positive, like, sure, she's sex positive. Sure, she has a healthy sexuality. Sure, she talks about sex, et cetera, et cetera. Just because you talk about sex doesn't mean you can go around kissing people.
Yeah. And then let's segue also deepen this further into the fact of how drunk Ross is demonstrated to be right before that kiss.
And consent is real.
Like, he walks out of the woman's bathroom. Yeah. He walks out. He clearly didn't know he was in the woman's bathroom. And knowing Ross's character, he would just die before he walked into a woman's bathroom on purpose. You know what I mean? Like, and he's clearly just emotionally destroyed right now. Mm-hmm. Extremely emotionally vulnerable. Completely wasted.
Yeah.
And then a kiss is exchanged. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so the big question is, did Nora kiss Ross? Did Ross kiss Nora? Or was it a mutual kiss? What do you think?
Should I share what our poll said?
Yeah.
Okay. So in our polls, we had 11% said Ross kissed Nora. 33% said Nora kissed Ross. And 55% said neither. It was mutual. Now, I will say that the 11% was Laura, who was in our watch party. And when she resaw the scene, she was like, I retract that. Ross kissed Nora, which makes it almost 50-50
right.
for Nora kissed Ross versus it was mutual.
Right.
Now, Emily, who do you think kissed who?
Okay, so it gets mutual. Ross puts his hand on her shoulder and pulls her closer. And there's, like, this, like, he's definitely into it. But Nora definitely initiated the kiss. And Ross says, uh-oh.
Okay, Ross is super drunk at this point. Super drunk. And also, Nora wraps her hands around his face and pulls him in.
His neck, but yeah. His
yeah.
neck and pulls him in.
And
he says, uh-oh, which clearly means, like, uh-oh.
Which is indicating uncertainty.
Yeah.
For the record...
Uncertainty is not consent.
It needs to be an enthusiastic yes.
Yeah.
And so there is an aspect here that it's like, this is not consensual.
I also, like, yeah, because there's also, like, other deep things to think about by the fact that, like, they've known each other for a long time. And so, like, is there a power dynamic between Chandler's mom and Ross? You know what I mean? Like, is there, like, they've known each other since college, so they were, like, adults, so there's not, like, a childhood attachment kind of trauma-ish things going on. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's definitely, like, she watched him grow up. How would we feel about this kiss if, let's say, it was, like, Rachel was really drunk and then Joey's dad was there and, like, he put his hand on her neck and pulled her into a kiss? Like, that would make me so uncomfortable if I witnessed that.
Yeah.
You know? And, like...
Like, I think that we need to look at this scene and see it fully for what it is, and that, like, this was not okay. And if we're moving towards a consensual world, we have to recognize that this kiss wasn't consensual.
I have feelings.
Okay, go ahead.
Because, like, okay, I get what you're saying, but I also feel... As though, one, we don't know how drunk Nora is. If the two are on equal drunk field, it might be a different conversation in itself.
I don't know, but if you rewind, like, even the opening of that scene is her being like, you okay, slugger? You know, again, going back to a power dynamic, like, she has her stuff together, seeing him as, like,
yeah,
as something, you know, someone that she is emotionally supporting, and...
Yeah, totally. For sure. I guess I just, like, I think that if you look at this episode as that kiss not being consensual, then it's, like, a very different...
Yeah.
...conversation that Ross then apologizes to Chandler for kissing his mom.
Right, yeah.
And so... The way that Ross apologizes to Chandler, like, to me, it feels as though he wanted that kiss as well.
It's really hard to tease apart. And the main thing here is, like, I'm glad that it was just a kiss. Obviously, there's a lot to like, unpack here.
I have the script up. Joey says, Ross, how could you let this happen? Which, if it's not consensual, that's not an okay thing to ask. But Ross says, I don't know. Well, it's not like she's a regular mom, you know? She's sexy.
Yeah, but how often... Okay, just, you know, throwing it in on the other side here. How often after something that was not consensual that happens between two people, the person who, let's say, whose boundaries were crossed takes...
Time to process it.
Not only time to process it, but believes... that they have full responsibility in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, including people who were, you know, violently raped, it's, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of the time that the psychological outcome of that is this, like, self-blaming that sort of happens and believing that they had responsibility in the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not obvious. It's not obvious. And I think that that's, like, kind of something that I want to make clear is, like, consent in is not just no means no.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's looking at power dynamics. It's looking at substance abuse, or not substance abuse. It's looking at, like, alcohol consumption. It's looking at a variety of different things. And... Yeah, there's just a lot. There's just a lot going
on. Yeah, it's not always so clear cut, but there is an importance to making that effort to try to understand and navigate it with
as much as possible.
Yeah, exactly, as much as possible, and also being able to recognize when you did something wrong.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree, and it's an ongoing conversation, and I think that, like,
how mad would you be if your mom kissed one of your friends?
Yeah, that'd be weird.
I mean, like, we can't even compare because it's, like, so different. But also, like...
Yeah, it'd be weird.
It's like...
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Like, Chandler has so many rights to be so upset about this.
Yeah, for sure.
And
you know what? I think that that's what comes through in the end is that, like, Chandler is clearly... mad at his mom for this happening.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up, like, really getting mad at his mom and, like, realizing that most of his anger towards Ross is not actually that much towards Ross. It's more towards his mom in this situation. And he even says that line, she's always doing these kind of things.
Right, yeah.
Like, this isn't the first time that she's done this kind of behavior.
Yeah.
Which then actually gets you more into the non-consensual part of it. Because, like it's just, like, if someone has a history of abusing power dynamics or a history of, like...
Crossing boundaries
and stuff like that, then that's, like, puts a different power play to it.
Yeah. And it's like not having healthy boundaries with your kid that you can respect, that causes trauma.
Yeah. We get two excellent lines in this scene.
Which scene are we in now?
The one where they're in the hallway and they're chatting. First of all, we finally are in Chandler and Joey's apartment again.
How many episodes has it been?
A very long time. The only scene that has been in Chandler and Joey's apartment besides this episode was when Chandler is teaching Joey how to smoke. But anyways, so Joey says the line, what, you don't think my mom's sexy? I'll have you know, Gloria Tribbiani was a handsome woman in her day. And then Ross says a great line. He's like, I think we're getting into a weird area here.
It's so good. It's just like the right line to use. And the
intonation he uses, like, I didn't do it justice, but yeah, Ross just does a great job in this.
Yeah, there's a few good lines in that series, and then like when, you know, Rachel comes out, and then
they're talking about like grip size. Yeah, they're like, pretending they played racquetball.
Sounds like you guys have got problems.
Sounds like you guys have got issues.
And then my favorite line is when they like get into the apartment, and Monica's like, "What did I ask?"
Yeah, because like, what are you guys doing here? Okay, next scene that they're in the hospital. So Phoebe and Monica are in the hospital, and Monica changed the coma guy's pajamas. And let's talk about consent again.
I don't even know how to.
There was like a whole theme of like women crossing boundaries in this episode.
Yeah, you're right. It's so creepy. It's just
soup's creepy.
Imagine like being in a coma and a stranger who is not a licensed healthcare professional who is being paid to do this is like undressing you and redressing you and like taking all your clothes off and putting other clothes on while decorating your room and reading you the newspaper and telling you.
It's next level creepy.
It's just, it's just, it's how. It's like what horror stories are built on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super creepy. Ugh. Ugh.
Again, a hilarious portrayal, though, of the desperation
that women have for decent men.
For a very low bar. It's like this was the best relationship that they have had thus far in the series, which is, like, unfortunate.
Yeah. Sorry. Just thinking of the next line. When they're back in Chandler and Joey's apartment, and Joey's angrily putting peanut butter on his toast as, like,
staring Ross down.
Chandler that, like, Paolo kissed his
mom. I don't even know what he was, like,
what was the plan, Ross?
Yeah, that was just, like, that literally made no sense. I almost feel like it would be worse if someone delivered hard news to me that way by kind of being like, I was going to try to get away with it. But then when I said it out loud, I realized that it wasn't going to pan out the way that I would have wanted it to. So now I will confess.
Then Ross says, I kissed your Nora. No, I kissed your mom. Nora, Mrs. Mom, you're Bing.
So good. Oh my god. And then you have Joey, who's giving the stink eye in the background.
Super stink eye.
Okay, common theme that is like the most redeeming quality of Joey is that he knows how to be a really good friend. Yeah. And he knows how to hold his other friends accountable to being good friends to each other.
Totally.
And like this, it's so obvious in this episode where he's the one that's like, first of all, you broke the code.
Yeah.
It's like this code that Joey knows, you know. Yeah. Ross is completely oblivious to
the friend code.
and then you have him that's like giving Ross like the straightforward tough love, like telling him that he's got to do the right thing and, you know, telling him to stop deluding himself into being dishonest and avoiding, you know, honesty. And like, that's just top notch friend work there, you know, and actually 100% of our pollers said that they've had to convince their friend to do the right thing in the past. And so, way to go being good friends. Being a good friend means the tough love sometimes and, like, having to, like, knock your friend out of, like, wanting to delude themselves of, like, trying to get away with things and being like, you have to do the right thing so that you're a good person.
Yeah.
Hold your friends accountable to being their best self. That is being a good friend.
Yeah, great. And then you got Chandler, who's like, you gotta let me slam the door! Which is a great, it's just a great line. Like, again, wonderful writing in that in that aspect.
Yeah.
So now we're back in Central Perk, and Phoebe's continuing to be, well, Rachel's working on her novel.
Yes.
A Woman Undone.
I wonder if there's any fan fiction of someone who actually
wrote that. Oh my god, that's so dope. I would love to read that.
Check in our descriptions, like our podcast description, because we'll do a quick search before.
See if we can find one.
Yeah, see if we can find it.
That'd be sick. I put a note. I was like, does Rachel ever do any actual work when she's working?
No, she doesn't. She's a horrible waitress, remember?
Never, ever doing work. And then Phoebe starts to sing the awkward song of the year. You don't have to be awake to be my man. Which also sounds like the tune to, like, a country song that I know, but whatever.
And then they both run out.
And go to the hospital.
Yeah. Chandler comes in. Mm-hmm. And...
Oh, yeah, no, and didn't... then and then you get this moment again where, like, the boys are decent in this episode in terms of, like, the way that Ross is like, look, you're not gonna talk to your mom, like, and then Chandler's like, it's complicated, it's complex, you know, like, you can't just talk to her. And Ross is, again, like, maybe Ross is the right person to do this because of the situation that just happened, but Ross is, like, pushing him to talk to his mom about his behavior and the way that it has an effect on Chandler. And Ross is basically encouraging his friend to be emotionally vulnerable.
Right.
And, like, talk to his mom about these things, which I think is dope.
Yeah, they do a really good job of sort of, like, being good friends to each other. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to ask you something. Okay. I find it interesting that Ross did not, like, Ross framed it in the sense of, like, I kissed your mom. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's how the information was passed over to Chandler.
Yeah.
There was no details given. Like, there's a part of me that's like, okay, this is, you know, a very common theme in sitcom sort of writing where it's like communication is not the best. And so It's like when information is passed on to someone else, they kind of get a different sort of idea of what happened compared to what the audience knows happened. But like outside of the consent situation, mm-hmm. like, do you think that Ross should have been more clear and been like, your mom kissed me, but mind you, I didn't stop her from kissing me and I kissed her back.
Right.
Or do you think that it was actually, like, the right thing to just sort of, like, take the full responsibility and not, like, burden Chandler with the nuances? Again, putting a pin in the consent conversation.
Yeah.
Like, let's say, like, let's take alcohol out of the situation and, you know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that, like, I definitely think that Ross saying I kissed your mom is a responsible way of doing it, which is odd for Ross taking responsibility for his actions.
Yeah.
But I think that
he tries really hard not to, though.
Yeah. First he blames Paolo, which is so funny considering how much he hates Paolo. But I think that him taking responsibility for it is good. Like, in the ways in which, like, he, again, taking consent out of it, I think if he had been like, your mom kissed me, it takes the responsibility off of his shoulders. But what I find interesting is that even though Ross phrased it, I kissed your mom, Chandler was mad at his mom, which to me...
I mean, he was mad at Ross.
No, totally. But then he was mad at his mom. He says, you kissed my best Ross. And it's just cute. And so, like, even though Ross told him that he kissed her.
Right.
Chandler, knowing the past behavior of his mom.
Like, he knew
that his mom played a large role in that behavior.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Yeah. Coma guy wakes up.
Agamemnon wakes up.
John Doe. Oh my god.
Yeah. And it's just...
The girl... He's like, who are you?
This scene is just so weird. Okay, I have so many thoughts. One is like, this poor guy. Like, imagine waking up from a coma. You've no idea how long you've been out for. And then you have these like... two people who are, like, standing over you, waiting on everything. Like, give him space. Yeah. Let him breathe.
Yeah. Like, I have to believe that he didn't just wake up from a coma, because if he had just woken up from a coma, like, I'm sure there would have been a nurse in the room and stuff like that. Like,
well, so far they've let random visitors come to this hospital. What is this hospital?
Yeah, but, like, whatever. He comes out of the bathroom. And he's like, oh, you know, I'm feeling woozy, but I'm okay.
Which, like, who are you?
Yeah. So then the girls are just so creepy. They continue this creepy tirade. Like, we give and we give and we give.
And Monica definitely has, like, multiple times where she gives a similar speech in the seasons.
Oh my God, totally. We thought you were different. I guess it was just the coma.
What I think is really cute is that, like, they kind of create, like, an animosity between each other, like a competitiveness, which we don't have time to dissect, like, you know, women against women and how, like, women are pitted against each other in society, and especially when it comes to men.
Yeah.
Anyway, but what I think is really cute is that at the end of the episode, it loops back around and they've just, like, got each other's backs.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, you deserved more. You deserved better. We deserve better.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just so sweet.
They are really cute. Yeah. I have to wonder why he didn't have more questions for them. Like, they were like, yeah, I shaved your face. I brought you an Etch-a-Sketch. Like, why wasn't he like, he says, like, oh, thanks. Like, why wasn't he like, why? Who the hell are you? Okay.
I think it's because he literally just woke up from a coma.
I think he just wants them out of the room, too. Like,
yeah,
probably like, just like,
please leave.
But then they go.
As I call the police.
Like, well, what do you want me to say?
Don't call the police.
I don't know. Like, that was nice. It meant something to me. I'll call you. Like, and he's like, okay, I'll call you. Like, what? Why are you going to call these creepy women who, like, changed your pajamas?
Well, yeah, that's clearly disingenuous.
He doesn't know they changed your pajamas.
Thank God. Like,
well, no, not thank God. He should know these things.
I don't even know.
At that point, I don't even... trauma.
Yeah, next scene. They're friends again.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. But, okay, wait. But we kind of talked about this already. Like, you know, him being like, you kissed my best Ross, and them having this fight. But what we didn't talk about in this scene is Nora's outfit. What the fuck is she wearing?
Are you saying that in a good way or a bad way?
She's wearing
the white outfit?
It's so intense.
I really like the flowy pants.
But like you can barely see the flowy pants.
Well, that's because it's shot in a way that you don't see.
No, that's because her coat goes to her knees.
Yeah. I really like
it. But it's not a coat.
Like, I would never wear what she's wearing, but I think it's very 90s.
I would say it's 80s. Like, her hair is teased out. Like, she's got more of an
80s. I mean,
80s,
this is 1994.
Like 95, actually.
My bad. 5th. I didn't notice that we went into the new year.
Well, probably it was filmed beforehand. So it was probably filmed in 1994. Anyways, but yes, I don't know. It feels very, like, mid-80s. Not that I was there.
I don't know. It got, like, I think one of the least favorable outfits of the episode. For the record, Rachel's outfit in the cafe when she announces Phoebe performing was number one. Mm. And then second place was Nora's outfit when she's on the phone and kisses Ross, which I did not like.
Yeah, there weren't like great outfits like this episode.
Yeah, I think that overall there weren't any very like spectacular outfits.
Chandler wears, like, a pretty dope tie at one point.
Well, he has this really strange but very well-coordinated outfit that I'm kind of disappointed didn't get higher votes.
Yeah. I put a note at the end of this scene, which is, first I wrote, the guys talking about their emotions, really great, so proud. And then I wrote, I actually hate how much I love Ross in this season. Because I realize I love Ross in this season.
Yeah.
Like, analyzing the show, talking about the show, I love Ross. And I'm saying this.
I don't not love Ross, but I think...
I love Ross in every way outside of his relationship with Rachel.
Right.
Outside of Rachel, I love Ross.
I don't not love Ross. I mean, he's definitely the one... I mean, like, I think we have a lot of capacity to sort of, like, mm-hmm. recognize that he's, like, going through a divorce, really struggling there, trying to get his life together, about to have a baby. And so I think it's really easy to kind of sympathize with him and be like, wow, you're, like you're just a very human person struggling with things that are coming at you. Yeah. And, you know, we don't have years of seeing these patterns of behavior yet. Yeah. Oh, man. I like Ross. I love David Schwimmer's portrayal of this character. Yeah, for sure. You know, like for his sure. his skills there. Mm-hmm. Are we at the very end now?
We're at the very end.
Like, which is like one of the best.
The niffles on heaving beasts.
So I think this is such a cute portrayal again of like their little chosen family mm-hmm. where they're all sitting around the living room. They're all just so supportive of each other.
Yeah.
And Rachel's handing out copies.
They're all supportive of each other except for Ross.
Sure. And then also, like, they're all supportive of each other, but they also all tease each other. It's, yeah. anyway.
It's a cute.
But it's just really cute that they would have a scenario where all of them would be sitting together and they're all going to read this mm-hmm. script that, like, not to mention the fact that, like, Rachel is so courageous for writing something.
Yeah.
And then sharing it, like, having people read it.
So embarrassing. Like, I would be so embarrassed if I wrote, like, erotic fiction and, like, had all my friends read it.
I mean, it was hard enough for us. Like, the first 7 episodes of us, like, creating this podcast, we were like, every time we would put it out, we were like, I can't believe we're doing this.
Yeah, I still don't want, I don't like when people listen to the podcast when I'm in the room. Don't want you to look at me while you're listening to my podcast.
It's like, it's a very vulnerable thing to just, like, talk about something, record the conversation, yeah. and then, like, just let people analyze it.
Yeah. And this is, like, erotic fiction. It's next level.
It is. It is.
Very next level.
Because it's usually like a reflection of your erotic sexuality.
Fantasies and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But I think Rachel's so cute. And she's just like, she's just trying so hard to like.
Find herself.
Find herself. Yeah. And this is just another like, you know, side piece moment. Of that. Of
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Which is like really cute. Mm-hmm. It's like another little thing that she's trying and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I think that's it. Everything. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Laura for being our most recent patron.
Patron
on Patreon. So excited.
Yay. Thanks, Laura. Woohoo.
Don't forget that you
can also become. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, rude.
Sorry.
Don't forget that you can listen to the full length of this episode by becoming a patron at the Secret Closet level.
Secret Closet.
The Secret Closet level, you get the uncut version of our episodes where we talk about everything more in-depthly and just ramble on, and then you get to hear a lot more of us making mistakes.
Like, probably this. No, I'm kidding.
Hey. Yeah.
And then also, if you want an ad-free version of our podcast, it is in the Pivot level. So for $8 a month, you can get an ad-free version of our podcast. No, $12 a month. $14 a month? No, $8 a month. I don't fucking know.
$8 a month. That's the Pivot level.
You should join our Netflix watch party. It is available for all Patreon subscribers. So even if you subscribe for as little as $2 US a month, you have access to our Netflix watch party that is every Wednesday at 12:15 p.m.
Also, look out, folks, because we're going to possibly be starting a YouTube channel for our podcast soon.
Woohoo! Yeah. Signing off. I'm Emily. You can find me on my website, www.emilybyoga.com, or on Instagram at emilybyoga. That's Emily with an I-E, not a Y.
And I am Quinn. You can find me on my website, www.quinnkbrunet.com, or as a handle on Instagram, quinnkbrunet.
Okay, bye!
Bye!
Bye! Keep deconstructing and diversifying the media you consume.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.